Hello and welcome back to Ring Ratings Rants and Reflections with me, Tris Dixon, joined by Tom Gray and Dougie Fisher from The Ring. Guys, we are meeting because last night Gennady Golovkin was unsuccessful in his third attempt to beat Sal Canelo Alvarez. Dougie, according to The Ring picks ahead of time, we were 20 and 0. People didn't expect Golovkin to produce the goods, and it's fair to say he didn't, did he?
No, he looked good for his age. It's the first time in my eyes he's decisively lost. I thought he won the first fight with Alvarez. I thought he's won all of his close fights, his fights against Danny Jacobs and Sergey Derevyanchenko. I thought the rematch with Alvarez was a draw. So in my eyes, he was the best middleweight in the world, still unbeaten, but after last night, yeah, I can definitely say he has a loss, and definitely Canelo Alvarez is his nemesis. To my eyes, Golovkin never really got started. It looked like the opening round, which a lot of people scored for Golovkin. I think Tom was among them. I didn't score it for Golovkin. He just didn't do enough for me. But the opening round looked like a feeling out round. And honestly, the next six rounds for Golovkin looked like feeling out rounds, and that was the problem. He got something going, some kind of rhythm going around round eight, and I would say from round 8 to 12 we had a decent 4-round fight. But first 7 rounds, to me, Golovkin, the real Golovkin, was missing in action.
Tom, what are you saying about that? Was it down to what Golovkin didn't do, or what Canelo did, or a little bit of both?
I felt that for the first time since his really steep decline has started, I felt that Golovkin was in against someone where he picked up very, very quickly that just that little split second of indecisiveness with letting his hands go because he's aged and because he's got a lot of wear and tear was going to get him hurt. I think he felt like, if you look at the first fight and the second fight, he's super confident coming forward. He's super confident off the back foot. He's countering Canelo. He's setting traps. He's doing all these things. But for whatever reason last night, he just seemed to get it into his head very quickly that there was a major speed disadvantage and that he was just a step behind. And that over the course of eight, I mean, essentially over those first 8 rounds, I gave him the first round because nothing happened, but that was the only round I gave him. I had that 11 rounds to one last night. And even though Golovkin came into it in the last third, what you can be guilty of is because his level come up, you start rewarding him more for that than if he's actually winning rounds, because Canelo was still whacking him back in those rounds. So you can't just say, oh, well, Golovkin's doing a bit better. I'll start saying he's winning rounds. I thought that it was, I just think his best days are behind him now. It was kind of what I feared would happen. I actually thought he would get stopped. And the only reason I think that he didn't get stopped is because he glued his hands to his head for 8 rounds, didn't give Canelo anything to shoot at. There was no counter-punching opportunities. Canelo boxed within himself, I felt. And to be quite honest, you look at both the fights, Canelo likes letting his hands go in prolonged bursts. Canelo fought last night in two-piece combinations, three-piece combinations, working the jab. He didn't need to do anything else. There was no test. He actually looked honestly bored a couple of times. That's how easy it was.
There's talk of Canelo possibly having a hand injury as well, so maybe that's why he didn't open up as time went on. Dougie, I mean, what does this mean for Golovkin moving forwards? Does this mean he's done? I mean, he is a middleweight and he has a middleweight title,
Yeah,
so
he
he's
has two
still
middleweight
got
titles.
So.
He has the IBF title and the WBA title that he ran from won from Murata in Japan earlier this year. He's still Ring Magazine's number one rated middleweight. He's been in these in our middleweight rankings for 11 plus years, which is kind of astounding. And he's been our number one rated middleweight, I think, at least 8 years, if not 9 years, which is also astounding. He felt good. I mean, Golovkin seemed to be proud that his face wasn't busted up, that it wasn't a physical fight, that he was able to minimize the physical damage that Alvarez was trying to impose on him. And he spoke freely during his post-fight interview and during the post-fight press conference that he wants to drop back down to middleweight and defend his titles. And if he wants to do that, I think he can do that. you ask if he's done. I think he's done as an elite fighter. I think his pound for pound days are far behind him. But I do think that he can be like the type of veteran that Nonito Donaire is. Donaire long in the tooth, especially for, you know, the featherweights and sub featherweights, but he has so much, he's so tough. His chin is so good. He has so much heart and he has so much experience. He can still hang with young guys in his best weight class. And I think for Golovkin, his best weight class is 160. I thought fighting at 168 might feel good to him, but Tom, correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe my eyes are deceiving me. He looked a little, not paunchy, but just a tad bloated.
Yeah, I totally agree. He and I'd said this, it was one of the only things that I got right in my prediction for the fight, but I said that I didn't like him at 168 pounds. He's got a middleweight frame. He's exactly like Hagler, in my opinion. If you'd taken Hagler, right. Remember there was talk of Hagler fighting Michael Spinks and all sorts of craziness back in the day. I just think that, you know, you look up middleweight and Golovkin standing there, and I thought that the weight suited Canelo down to the ground.
Yeah, I think that's what we would have got if we'd had Karl Froch going up to 175 for a catchweight or for a light heavyweight fight. Same thing, really. Just those some of those guys just find their weight class, don't they?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Dougie, in terms of, you know, are there any names out there at 160 that you would like to match Golovkin with? And would you still put him in with anyone at middleweight?
Yes, I would. I wouldn't strongly favor him the way I probably would have in previous years. Even earlier this year, after the Murata fight, I was still thinking, you know what? I think Golovkin can beat all of the top middleweights out there. There's definitely middleweights that I thought would give him a run for his money, like Demetrius Andrade and Jermell Charlo, and even Jaime Munguia, just because of his size and his youth and his volume. He can let his hands go. Golovkin is obviously at the stage where he can't pull the trigger the way he used to pull the trigger. And his jab doesn't seem as much as a pile driver as it once was. But, you know, in the middle rounds of the Murata fight and in the late rounds of the Alvarez fight, he did show that he can apply some smart pressure and let his hands go to an extent. The Charlo fight would be the dream matchup for me. You have two offense-minded middleweight lions. It's the younger lion versus the old lion in Triple G. I think the fights that are makeable right now, if his promotional and his network/platform affiliation doesn't change, I think the Jaime Munguia fight is probably the easiest marquee middleweight matchup for Golovkin. But if Golovkin becomes a free agent anytime soon, it's not inconceivable that he goes over to the PBC for two or three fights the way Manny Pacquiao did.
That step up, that Munguia fight would be, or that's the step up we've been waiting for Munguia, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
And perfect showdown for like Cinco de Mayo, because Alvarez is talking about taking some time off, maybe more than just, you know, 4 or 5 months. So if Alvarez isn't ready to go by, you know, May 5th weekend, every promoter, every platform wants to have a big fight, ideally a pay-per-view type of showdown for that Cinco de Mayo weekend, because it's kind of a boxing tradition, at least in North America. And Triple G, Mr. Mexican style versus a Tijuana native, an undefeated young up-and-comer like Jaime Munguia, I think that sort of fits the bill.
Yep.
Hey, Tom, before we say about what's next for Canelo, let's talk about the scorecards. They went down a storm again last night. It was widely heralded that two of the judges were way off and one was slightly less further away than the other two. But it was, what's going on?
You can only use a bit of guesswork. I mean, I've seen some talk that it was perhaps down to the fact that because it goes back half a decade to where Golovkin was jobbed the first time, so we'll make it a bit closer as some sort of apology. I don't know. I don't know what they were watching. I mean, I cannot begin to fathom how you give Golovkin 5 rounds of the fight. I do not see it. And then I was thinking to myself, I mean, you're so perilously close to a draw there. How stupid the sport would have looked if that had happened. And the fact that, Canelo can't even turn around with a straight face and complain because he got a draw that he didn't deserve. It would have been good to be a fly on the wall, if it had happened. But we can only be satisfied that, that they got the right winner. But I thought the numbers were a travesty.
Dougie, I mean, do you have an answer for this in a nutshell, how we can avoid having this conversation most months, if not most weeks?
Yeah, I think we have to make our, especially for big fights, huge main event fights, I think the commissions have to make all of the officials, not just the judges, but the referee, available to the media. I think they should be announced as many weeks in advance as possible, so people can do their research on the judges' track records and their proclivities, for lack of a better word. And I think that the judges should not just be accountable to the public and to the media, but there also needs to be a system with every commission, especially a major boxing commission or a major athletic commission, to have a sit down between the referees and the judges, and just go over, all right, whether they, it doesn't matter if they did a terrible job or a serviceable job or a great job. I think that at least once a month they should meet and go over the fights and go over what happened and still kind of express to their peers and to their superiors why they scored a fight the way they did, or why they called a certain action within the ring the way they did. The fight before Canelo Golovkin was a WBC super flyweight title bout with Bam Rodriguez against Giga Gonzalez. And there were some low blows in that fight. And there was some question on whether or not the referee, I think it was Kenny Bayless, should have taken a point from the first low blow that he called against Rodriguez. And then there was another, maybe more egregious low blow where Bayless didn't take a point. And I think it would be helpful to the official, even a veteran like Bayless, if he's able to look, watch the fight again with some of his referee peers, but also the executive director of the commission, and say, oh yeah, I was in bad position here. I didn't see that. Actually, I probably should have taken another point from Rodriguez, or, maybe I shouldn't have. Maybe, from this angle, I view these as borderline shots, and here's why, and explain themselves. And I think it would be awesome if said workshops were open to at least some members of the media, particularly veteran members of the media that covering the sport from ringside for a long period of time.
This sounds way too sensible, Doug.
It does. Well, let me tell you something. A guy who just got inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame, he works with the UFC right now and was the executive director for several years, Mark Ratner, he used to do just that.
Right.
And those workshops were not only open to the media, but even members of the public, if they found out about it, if they learned about it, they could go and sit in. I have some friends of mine that actually did that, and this hasn't been done, I guess, since Ratner's heyday, and I would say his peak years were late 90s, early 2000s. But I think that's something that should be revisited.
I think Jack
not
Reese,
just with the Nevada State Athletic Commission, but with all commissions.
Yeah, I think the California Commission. I think Jack Reese was doing something like a workshop for referees in California. Yeah. It would be good if it was.
But
more
I think they need to be accountable. They need to get over just speaking through the media and through the media to the public, because I think a lot of these judges, they get in their own head, and they will overthink things. And I think, most scorecards, or a lot of scorecards, had Canelo Alvarez pitching a shutout through seven rounds. And I think these judges, they're thinking, wow, I'm on my way to having a one-sided scorecard for Canelo. I might end up with a 119 to 109 or a 118 to 110. And that's the exact same scorecard that Anthony Burton had.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Fight. And no, I'm serious. They remember the
backlash.
No,
absolutely.
They get scared and they start to overthink. They start well, doing, I they remember... stop doing their job and start trying to do damage control. And then what they do is they bend over backwards for the other guy. In this case, it's Triple G. And they wind up with 7 rounds to 5.
Well, I remember that being, you know, one of the first times I remember that first being discussed that I can recall was with Lennox Lewis and Evander Holyfield after the draw. And yes. They were like, well, Evander was, you know, was competitive in the second fight. And I think they just wiped him off just thinking, you know, because he got a gift of a draw in the first fight.
Right. Revenge scorecards. Makeup scorecards. Yeah.
Hey, so Tom, what next for Canelo now then? Obviously, Dougie mentioned about him having a layoff, but is I'm assuming he's not going to go back to 160, even though there might be a couple of options, but sit at 168 and possibly have another crack at 175. What would you do if you were him?
Well, I mean, it was interesting post-fight where there were the talk again was of Bivol. Now, I rate Canelo, he's pure elite. He's still one of the top 10 best fighters in the world, but I see no point in going back in with Bivol. Like, stylistically, it just looks like, you know, someone's went into a lab to create the worst style possible for Canelo Alvarez. And we've seen him against that style before, and he doesn't like a boxer or a mover. Bivol's durable, just, you know, not phased in the slightest. That kind of Eastern European, you know, I'm not getting phased by anything. I'm all over you. I don't think he's get any respect for Canelo's power. And I just think you would see a replay. I would actually rather see him in against Beterbiev. Now, a lot of people might laugh at that, but I just think his style matches up better against that opponent. And I'm not afraid to say it. I think that's probably more winnable for Canelo than what Bivol is in a return. Benavidez, as I understand it, I didn't see the post-fight press conference, but Canelo's all but blew him out the water, basically said that he's not done anything in his career. Why does he deserve a fight against me, etc.? Difficult. I mean, I was thinking today as well, there's the possibility, sorry, Chris, the possibility that Eddie might want him in with Joshua Buatsi, which is a fight I would like to see. Now, I don't know if Joshua Buatsi is ready for it, but I think it would be a massive event in the UK if they could get that going.
Yeah, you say, what's he done to deserve a shot at me? Well, you could have said that about Bivol before we went into that one, right?
Well, Bivol, at the end of the day, Benavidez has got a bit more of a checkered past than what Bivol has in terms of his titles and stuff like that. Benavidez has made mistakes in his career and lost a lot of momentum, and no one's to blame for that except him. So I can understand where Canelo's coming from, but, you know, also, regardless, Benavidez's class, it would be, you know, if Canelo's going to fight at 168 pounds, that's the fight that I'd want to see. And I don't think either of you guys can think of anyone else better. That's the fight you'd want to see at 168. But yeah, I mean, there's options for it, always options for someone of Canelo's caliber.
Dougie, give me two names. The person Canelo should fight next and the person you'd like him to fight next most.
Well, they're one and the same. And I agree with his criticism for David Benavidez and team Benavidez. He said during the post-fight press conference, you fought one former champion, Jarrell, right? Actually, he was wrong. He's actually fought two former champions. There's also David Lemieux, yeah. But that's nothing really to brag about, you know, fighting at this stage of Lemieux's career and at super middleweight. But it's true, Benavidez's his resume is pretty thin, and compared to Alvarez's, it is no resume. But he brings youth, he brings physical tools, and for me, he brings a different kind of challenge. I think we've seen Canelo in with the stick and move specialists. I mean, he hasn't shied from fighting what fans like to call the pure boxers, right? You know, so, you know, Floyd Mayweather or Arislandi Lara or Billy Joe Saunders or Caleb Plant. And obviously Bivol was like the biggest and the strongest and probably the most talented and in his at his peak of all of those names. And, you know, Canelo came up short. But I don't like watching him fight that type of style because he just takes his time. He walks him down. You know, he takes a lot of things for granted. Like if there's a quiet round, it's just going to go to him because he's Canelo and he's walking forward. I'd like to see somebody put it on him. I'd like to see him in against a pressure fighter, who has that, who is a natural at that style, and also brings the volume punching and sharp punching, heavy hands, and just a younger, bigger, presumably physically stronger, although, you know, that remains to be seen. But somebody's going to physically impose himself on Canelo, and I want to see how Canelo deals with that. And I know Tom talked about Beterbiev, who also is a pressure fighter, but Beterbiev is more of a versatile boxer, pressure fighter, if he wants to be or needs to be. And he's far more methodical, a little bit slower in the foot, and obviously a lot longer in the tooth than Benavidez. I like Benavidez just because of his youthful enthusiasm. He might just throw everything at Canelo and be willing to go out on his shield. And it's been a long time since we've seen Canelo in a shootout, particularly a world-class shootout. So I'm ready for that. So for me, world faster is Benavidez.
There's a lot to be said for freshness as a quality, right? When you start to look at these guys getting up there in age, you know, it may be to Benavidez's benefit that he hasn't been through all these wars that, you know, and fought 20 former world champions and stuff. You know, the mileage is still low, which is not a bad thing in this sport. Tom, so last night, where does this now mean that Golovkin Canelo sits in the pantheon of trilogies? It knocks it down for a few pegs from where it could have been. It certainly takes it out of the top five trilogies, right?
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I've not given it much thought, but because the fight last night, let's face it, was a damp squib. It wasn't very competitive compared to the first. I mean, the second fight was one of the best fights at middleweight in decades. I felt like absolutely sensational. The second fight was, but as a trilogy, no, it doesn't fit in now because that fight was essentially one-sided and a bit of a shame. I just felt kind of sad watching it. Maybe I get myself too pumped up for it over the weekend, but no, I don't think it sits well. The thing that I came away with, I wrote a column on it today, is the fact that trilogy closes without Golovkin getting a win, which is pretty tragic, and it's spookily reminiscent to the way I felt with Pacquiao and Marquez. Like, I loved both those guys, but when you got to after fight three and Marquez still hadn't won one, I mean, I was convinced he'd won the third one. I felt sick when that decision was announced. But because there was controversy there was a reason to go again, and Marquez got his vindication by knocking Pacquiao's spark out, which was worth five wins to do that to Manny Pacquiao. Golovkin's not going to get that chance, which is a shame, because he definitely deserved the first one. And arguably deserved the second one. I had Canelo just edging that, but no, it won't get remembered as a great trilogy. I just think the takeaway from it is the fact that the guy didn't even get one win out of those three fights. That's pretty tragic.
Dougie, how about you historically? How does it sit? I mean, Tom mentioned that column. Man, I've read Tom's column, which you could see at ringtv.com. It's interesting. Obviously, he starts off talking about, you know, it was more Duran Leonard 3 than it was Ali Frazier 3, which Tom and I talked about in the build up podcast. I did say, you know, I was concerned that these guys are getting on there in age, and so how about you? It was no Bo Holyfield trilogy. It was no Ali Frazier.
You know what it reminds me of? It's any trilogy where the first two fights are classics, and then the third fight is a letdown or just one sided, not competitive. And the trilogy that comes to mind is Manny Pacquiao versus Eric Morales. The first fight was a classic. The second fight was damn good. It was a battle of attrition, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, until Manny just kind of overwhelmed him in the late rounds. Got a 10th round stoppage, if memory serves me. But then the third fight, Morales had nothing left, and he gets blown out in like two or three rounds. Yep. He probably could have got up. He gets dropped in the third round. He's just like, yeah, I'm done. You know what I mean? And so it was a buzzkill. It was a letdown. Now this rubber match between Canelo and Golovkin, it wasn't a blowout. It was on its way to being a shutout. Some people actually believe it is a shutout, or like Tom, you know, that Golovkin only won one quiet round at the start of the start of the fight. My scorecard was like the third judge that isn't getting dragged along the coals as much as the other two. I had it eight rounds to four. I think I scored rounds 8, 9, and 11 and 12 for Golovkin. And if you accuse me of being sympathetic for Golovkin, yeah, I will admit that. A little bit of, there is some, he's kind of like a sentimental favorite, I think, for a lot of fans and even members of the media. So I'm human, and I would look at this card and probably think, you know, a 117-111 would have been fairer to Alvarez. But the bottom line is the competition just wasn't there. And that's what we had with Pacquiao and Morales in that third fight. Everybody's hopes were up. You know, both guys have their dedicated fan bases. Everybody showed up in Vegas. And then it's just Pacquiao runs away with it. But at least with Pacquiao, it was over quick. With Alvarez and Golovkin, it was more of a slow bleed. And so in a way, a little sadder.
Guys, I'll tell you one it matches up against would be Tony McCallum. And interestingly enough, that was a draw in the first fight, Tony in the second fight, Tony in the third fight when McCallum's a bit over the hill.
Right, so, and nobody cared about the third fight. Yeah, wasn't it like a cruiserweight or something like that?
Yeah, it was 182 or something from memory. So yeah, that's probably the one that's
more a good analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think the thing is here, you know, when we talk about Leonard Duran III, like they were both over the hill. This was a bad fight because Golovkin was more over the hill than Canelo, right?
Yeah.
And that's just the way it worked out. Hey, before we change subjects, I do want to just talk TV. I know we don't do a lot of that, but guys, this DAZN thing's really kicked off everywhere. And yeah, I find it fascinating. Obviously, people are crapping on DAZN because, you know, it was pay-per-view on top of your subscription and everything else. I've seen nothing but, I don't know, it seems to be dominating the boxing conversation more so than the fight. It's certainly coming up to the fight. Tom, what's your take on that? I mean, I guess from a sympathetic thing, it's needs must, right? These guys need to split 65 million. How else are you going to get it?
Do you know what it is? Like, and listen, I am far from bloody flush, right? I am anything but flush, but I didn't mind paying an extra tenner. And I'm not being, you know, I'm not coming down hard on people that are financially strapped, far from it. And especially the times we're in, it's, you know, cost of living over here is an absolute joke. But the mistake they made was going gung-ho with DAZN with the, you know, all the billions of dollars and all that and blah, you know, pay-per-view is finished. When you start saying that stuff, and I know Oscar definitely said it, Eddie maybe said it in a different kind of roundabout way. So when you bring the pay-per-view platform back in, people are going to have a bitch fit because you've said that it was on the way out the door and now you're wanting the money again. So it just looks like you're a turncoat almost. So that's essentially the way that it's went. But realistically, yeah, I mean, I stayed up last night. I actually feel like I've got jet lag. I stayed all the way up to 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning and I'm exhausted. But I didn't mind paying out, you know, 10 quid for that last night, especially when you consider that there's pay-per-views in the States, 75, $100. Like I just, it's a bit of perspective. I was fine with it. I mean, it's what they've said initially. Sorry, some kids just messing about at the front of my car there. Yeah, it's what they said initially. Know, made it look a bit silly.
Dougie, how about you? I mean, it's not been a great PR thing for them, has it?
No, it hasn't, but I expected it. Even if they were still saying bye-bye pay-per-view and running all those commercials, I still expected this particular fight between Alvarez and Golovkin to be pay-per-view because they invested so much in both fighters. Years ago, when HBO went out of the boxing business and they signed Canelo Alvarez to that record-breaking contract where he was making guaranteed $35 million against anybody, right? No matter who he fought, he was going to make $35 million. And then they went and signed Golovkin, and Golovkin was playing the field. After HBO dropped out, he visited the PBC. He was looking into ESPN, and DAZN was able to grab him because they gave him a big guarantee. I think it was like $8 million per fight, regardless of the opponent. So you could fight somebody like Steve Rolls and make $8 million, which is insane. And I think also part of Golovkin's deal was that you know, his promotional company, fighters in his promotional company were going to get dates. And he had some kind of equity in the company, right? Is my memory treating me right here? Like, he was getting some points with the actual company.
Yeah, I remember sounds accurate.
Golovkin was boasting about that when they had their the press conference announcing the DAZN Triple G deal. He was like, you know, Alvarez is an employee. He works for me now. Or something like that, just trying to get under Alvarez's skin. But the reason they gave that much and they signed these crazy deals that were not sustainable, either deal, not sustainable. Even before, even pre-pandemic, it was not economically sustainable, was in the dream of this payoff. They were there for at least the rematch. They were there in force. All the DAZN executives were there in Vegas and at T-Mobile, and they saw the crowds that both guys brought in, and they looked at the HBO numbers, and that was a million-plus pay-per-view buying event. So they were like, that's what we need. If we can do that, if we can get these two together for fight number three, we can do a million plus pay-per-view and we can be in real business here. And I think they were hoping it would happen in like 2019. Instead, yeah, it happens in 2022. And everybody, you know, nobody's money is the same as it is now, as it was, you know, some years ago. So yeah, fans are definitely going to complain about it. They're going to, you know, point out hypocrisy. But fans also just like to complain. I mean, my Twitter timeline was just alive with people ripping the commentary, you know, and saying, oh, I miss HBO so much. I miss Jim Murray. I miss Larry Merchant. I miss Max Kellerman. I know some of those same people bitched and moaned about Kellerman and Merchant and Roy Jones Jr. and Jim Lampley and, you know, even the great Emmanuel Stewart. It's just fight fans. We complain.
All right. Well, I did want to hear what you guys thought about that. Tom, you are heading to Manchester this week for Joyce and Parker. Good heavyweight fight. You must be, I'm assuming you're looking forward to it, right? It's going to be a good fight. Good clash of styles.
Absolutely. I think so. And like Parker, I think, presents a stylistic challenge for Joyce because he's mega durable. Joyce is one of these guys, kind of pedestrian, one paced, but he's constantly breaking guys down. And I think Parker is going to be a really tough challenge. And he's very athletic for a man of his size, Parker. Good movement, good hand speed. So if Joyce can't, you know, exact a toll on him and wear him down, I think this could be a tough night's work for Joyce. I'm finding it very hard to pick a winner in that fight.
And Dougie, over on your side of the pond, we have the return of Shakur Stevenson.
Yeah, the best junior lightweight in the game, the Ring Magazine champion, who also holds the WBC and WBO belts. And he's in solid. He's not in with a world beater. He's not in with a guy that I would consider even like a top three or four contender. But the Brazilian had a good amateur background. We'll see Shakur against a fellow boxer. But Shakur is one of those boxers who's kryptonite to other boxers. He's got that Pernell Whitaker thing. Some boxers are very comfortable with boxers, and they just know how to control the distance and beat the other guy to the trigger.
Okay.
I think that's what we're going to get.
Right, guys, we've got time for a quick rant each. Tom, the fight we need is Golovkin-Canelo 4, as it's basically 1-1-1.
Absolutely. And when you look back at the draw in the first fight, I mean, I'm still smarting over that. I think that Golovkin definitely deserves a fourth fight. At the end of the day, I think he just had an off night last night. You know, maybe didn't do the weight correctly or something like that. And I think he deserves his opportunity to get Canelo back in. Canelo almost, you know, at the end of the day, if Manny Pacquiao gave Marquez a fourth fight because of what happened multiple times, and I think that Golovkin deserves a fourth fight
Okay, I'll take that. That's all right. Okay, Dougie, you got 30 seconds. Dougie, we need to let Fury Joshua marinate. December the 3rd is way too early.
It's way too early. Listen, man, let Joshua come back, let him regain his mojo. I mean, right now, if they get the fight this year, yeah, it's a super fight. I admit that. It's a super fight in the UK. Here in America and elsewhere, you know, we're sour on Anthony Joshua. He has to make us believers again. Once upon a time, he was the heir apparent. he has to prove himself again. I think the best way to do that is to get three or four fights. Definitely go back to
and
Robert
time,
Garcia.
Come
out to Riverside.
Hey, good, Dougie. It's you, Dougie. It was always you, Dougie Fisher. Guys, thanks a lot for joining me. We'll be back next week.
Thanks, lads.